ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भगवद गीता चैप्टर 6 एंटाइटल्ड ध्यान योग। टुडे वी विल बी कवरिंग फ्रॉम वर्सेस 7 to 9। प्लीज रिपीट आफ्टर मी वर्स नंबर 7। जितात्मनः जितात्मनः प्रशान्तस्य परमात्मा समाहितः शीतोष्ण सुख दुःखेषु तथा मानापमानयो। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस अभय चरणारविंद भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन: For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same. Purport: Actually, every living entity is intended to abide by the dictation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated in everyone's heart as Paramatma. When the mind is misled by the external illusory energy, one becomes entangled in material activities. Therefore, as soon as one's mind is controlled through one of the yoga systems, one should be considered to have already reached the destination. One has to abide by superior dictation. When one's mind is fixed on the superior nature, he has no alternative but to follow the dictation of the Supreme. The mind must admit some superior dictation and follow it. The effect of controlling the mind is that one automatically follows the dictation of the Paramatma or Super Soul. Because this transcendental position is at once achieved by one who is in Krishna consciousness, the devotee of the Lord is unaffected by the dualities of material existence, namely distress and happiness, cold and heat, etc. This state is practical samadhi or absorption in the Supreme. Hare Krishna. So this evening we have a very interesting set of verses on which we will be discussing. So in the beginning of this 6th chapter, from the first verse to the 4th verse, Krishna is discussing why should a living entity perform work. And he further elaborates by saying how one should perform Nishkam Karma Yoga, that is performing one's constitutional duties without expectation of any results, Nishkam Karma Yoga, for their own purification. Further, in the next 2 verses, that is the 5th and the 6th verse, Krishna is talking about the control of mind. Krishna says how the mind is a friend as well as the enemy of a living entity. For a person whose mind is controlled, the mind is the best friend. And for a person whose mind is uncontrolled, it is his worst enemy. And now, in these verses from 6.7 to 6.9, Krishna is describing the symptoms of a perfect yogi, one who has achieved perfection in the system of Ashtanga Yoga and is at the Yoga Rudha stage. So, in the purport, Prabhupada makes some very interesting points. In the translation itself, we can see Krishna is saying, for one who has, he continues on, I mean this is the 7th verse, so in the 5th and 6th verse he is talking about the mind and how a controlled mind is a friend. So in the 7th verse he continues and he says, for one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. So, actually, if we see in the 2nd chapter itself, there is another hint given where Krishna is saying, Nasti buddhir ayuktasya nacha yuktasya bhavana nacha bhavayata shantir ashantasya kuta sukham. So Krishna is saying in the second chapter itself, long, long ago, that nasti buddhir ayuktasya. Na asti. Nasti buddhir. That means there cannot be any intelligence for a person who is not within Krishna consciousness, who is not engaged in Krishna conscious activities. So, nasti buddhir ayuktasya and nacha ayuktasya bhavana. And for such a person who is not engaged in Krishna consciousness activities, there cannot be any fixed mind. His mind cannot be fixed in happiness. Nacha bhavayata shantir. And for such a person whose mind is not fixed, nacha bhavayata shantir. There is no shanti. And for a person who is not, peaceful or who has no peace, ashantasya kuta sukham. For such a person who is not peaceful, where is there a question of any happiness or any sukh? So we see in our day-to-day life, like Prabhupada makes this mention about the same thing, the devotee of the Lord is unaffected by the dualities of material existence, namely desires and happiness, cold and heat. And this state is practical samadhi or absorption in the Supreme. So we see that how devotees of the Lord, this even Lord Krishna says in the second chapter again about how one should tolerate. He says, Matra sparshastu kaunteya shita ushna sukha dukhada. Why do we experience these dualities? Why do we experience duality of heat, cold, happiness, distress, all these different dualities? Because of matra sparsha. Matra sparshastu. Only because of contact with this material nature and our identification, wrongly identifying ourselves with this material nature. Jai Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai, Shri Gopal ji ki jai, Nitai Gaur Chandra ki jai. So it is only because of contact with the material nature, only because our original identity as the spirit soul is falsely identifying itself with this material nature or this body, therefore, we are experiencing various dualities of heat, cold, distress, happiness, all these things. So, in that particular purport to that particular verse in second chapter, Prabhupada gives a very nice example that even if in summer it is so hot, but still a housewife, because she loves her family, she doesn't refrain from cooking. It's hot and it is not so easy to cook in front of a fire. The heat is so much more, and in a city like Mumbai, so much more humidity, you are perspiring so much. It is not a very easy job to cook in front of a fire. But a housewife, because she loves her family, she gladly takes that extra effort, that pain, to prepare nice foodstuffs for the family. Also, another example Prabhupada gives, that just as in the winter it is very cold and it is not so easy to take a cold water bath, but still a devotee of the Lord who is engaged in serving the Lord, he knows that before I go to serve the Lord, I have to cleanse my body, and therefore early in the morning, especially it's more difficult. But still early in the morning, the devotee will gladly take a cold water bath and then go to serve the Lord. So similarly, so this gives us an idea of how devotees, specifically engaged in Krishna conscious activities, their idea is, if Krishna likes it, I better like it. And if Krishna does not like it, I don't care whether I like it or not, especially on the bodily platform. So, actually, if we see in the beginning itself, the whole purpose of this Bhagavad Gita also is in one sense to drive home this point, that if Krishna likes it, I like it. In the initial chapter, first chapter, second chapter, we see that Arjuna was reluctant to fight on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He was not ready to do it. He was explaining so many reasons to Krishna why he cannot fight. Because of family, how can I fight against my elders, how can I fight against my teachers, and so many different varieties of highly scholarly reasons Arjuna was presenting in front of Krishna. But the whole Bhagavad Gita Krishna presented to Arjuna just in order to drive home this point that if Krishna likes it, I better do it. I better like it. And if Krishna does not like it, I don't care whether I like it or not. If Krishna does not like it, then I also don't like it. So, this is the formula by which devotees live their lives. And they are so blissfully situated. Just like I gave the example of devotees, they are cooking. Devotees are cooking for the pleasure of Krishna in summer heat. And devotees are taking bath in cold water in the early morning during winter. These are not very pleasurable activities, but because this is an activity which is going to give pleasure to Krishna, so I like it. Otherwise, I don't like it. So, even in this Ashtanga Yoga platform, we see, actually, the Ashtanga Yoga platform, it involves generally for people in this world, yoga only they understand is what people know by certain asanas or certain exercises which they perform. But basically, the Ashtanga Yoga process consists of 8 different steps, beginning with yam, niyam, asana, pranayam. So asana is just one step, the third step. Before that, there are some do's, some regulations, niyam, some yam which you don't do, then asana. Then you come to the stage where you perform certain exercises so that you can make your body fit enough to go to the next stage. Then pranayam, certain where you control your breathing process, your breath. Pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. So the topmost stage that an Ashtanga yogi can reach is the stage of samadhi, where he actually understands his position with respect to the super soul, the Paramatma residing within his heart. And when he understands it, then he surrenders to the desires of the Paramatma within his heart at the stage of samadhi. But here, Prabhupada makes a very interesting point. He says that because this transcendental position is at once achieved by one who is in Krishna consciousness, the devotee of the Lord is unaffected by the dualities of material existence, namely distress and happiness, cold and heat, etc. This state is practical samadhi. So, for a devotee, every step, like we see in our particular society, Srila Prabhupada has formed this society. Every moment of the day is compartmentalized in such a way that we are constantly engaged in certain services to the Lord. And practically, samadhi means you are completely immersed in thought about the Lord and you are completely surrendered. So, this is, Prabhupada says, this state is practical samadhi. That means absorption in the Supreme, but in a practical sense, not just you are in this Ashtanga Yoga style, you go to some secluded place, you perform all the various steps, come up to the stage of samadhi and you are sitting in a samadhi in a secluded place and you are completely absorbed in the Supreme. But in Krishna consciousness, specifically this particular society of ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada has given us something which is directly the topmost stage of Ashtanga Yoga, samadhi, but much more better in the sense that it is practical samadhi. It is practically engaging us in service to the Lord, and by serving the Lord in practical day-to-day, moment-to-moment absorption in the Supreme. Like for example, from morning we have Mangal Aarti, Narsingh Aarti, Tulsi Aarti, then Japa, then we have Darshan of the Lord, then after that Guru Puja, then Bhagavatam class in the morning, and after that there are all the devotees, they have their own personal services, they do their services in and around the temple, go to preaching activities, then they also do their own personal study, And after that, again in the evening, we have evening program where we have Sandhya Arati, Narsingh Arati, and we have Bhagavad Gita class, and after that, Swayam Darshan. So the whole day is completely covered in such a way that each individual can be engaged in practical moment-to-moment absorption in the Supreme, which is like the last stage. I mean, after going through all these yama, niyam, asana, pranayam, pratyahar, dharana, dhyan, and then an Ashtanga Yogi will come to the stage of samadhi or complete absorption in the Supreme. So it is our great fortune, we should understand, that Srila Prabhupada has given us this opportunity to directly come to the stage. Directly, without going through all the stage. And actually that is the greatness of this process of Krishna consciousness. It is so simple. It's simple, at the same time it is delivering us, it is giving us the maximum benefit. The benefit which will be achieved by going through so many stages. If we are trying to achieve the same benefit, it is possible. It's not that it is impossible, it is possible through the process of Ashtang Yoga, but it takes so much more effort, so much more time. And practically speaking, it's not a very practical and doable sort of thing in this Kali Yuga, where our span of concentration, memory, and all these things are going down day by day, a span of life, intelligence, everything is going down day by day. So it is not a very doable or a very practical solution. Even though it is possible to get the final goal of being completely absorbed in the Supreme, but it is, like speaking in the terms of a businessman, it is too much investment for too little returns. If you invest so much time and so on, but it's too much investment. It's like an overkill. So, in the first verse here, Krishna is talking about how a person, once he has controlled his mind, he has conquered the mind, he has already reached the stage of samadhi, or the super soul is already reached. So, let us see what happens next. So, in the 8th verse, Krishna is talking about Jnana vijnana triptatma kutastho vijitendriyah yukta ityuchyate yogi samaloshtra smakanchanah. This is a very, 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 very high level stage which Krishna is talking about. The translation says, a person is said to be established in self-realization and is called a yogi or a mystic when he is fully satisfied by virtue of acquired knowledge and realization. Such a person is situated in transcendence and is self-controlled. He sees everything, whether it be pebbles, stones or gold, as the same. He sees everything, whether it be pebbles, stones or gold, as the same. This is a very high stage of achievement in the process or the path of self-realization. So in the purport, Prabhupada makes a very interesting point at the first line itself. Prabhupada says, book knowledge without realization of the Supreme Truth is useless. So actually I was thinking how I will be able to explain this particular point, that book knowledge without realization. You know from book, but you don't have any realization about it, is useless. So just consider, you have a person and he has very good memory. And you give him a book which is a recipe book of cooking, and you give that person the recipe book and he memorizes all the recipes in that book. Every one recipe he knows, how much quantity of ingredients to take, how much cooking time, how much preparation time, how much time you have to do a particular procedure, and then how do you do the next procedure. Everything is written down and he memorizes the whole thing. But he never goes into the kitchen. He never enters the kitchen. He has memorized everything, but he never enters the kitchen. So this is something which will give, because many housewives here and also many people here who might be having a cursory interest in cooking, book recipes, when you actually practically go down to make those recipes, they never turn out the way they are shown in the photographs. Photographs are good in the book, but definitely they never turn out the way, because there are so many small intricacies which you have to look into, like what type of flame or which brand of oven or what type of sugar or what type of oil or ghee or butter or what they used. And if you don't specifically use that particular type, it will not come out exactly what they are telling you, you know. So you may have to do some trials and errors, and you know, you learn by trial and error, and after some time maybe it will come out like the way it looks in the book. But if you don't, so that time it is realized knowledge. So you have realized that knowledge which is in the book when you actually go and try to do it in the kitchen. So book knowledge without realization of the supreme truth is useless. So similarly, we see many times that many times it is very difficult for a person to understand even shastric knowledge. Like it is said that cow dung is a very purifying agent from the Vedic scripture, if you see that. But a person who has not understood, and he has only understanding from a Western or an empirical point of view, he'll say, how can you say that? Cow dung is a, you know, stool of an animal, and stool is supposed to be impure. But actually, even empirical scientists have done scientific research and studies and found that cow dung and cow urine, they contain a lot of antiseptic properties. And this is an established scientific fact, scientific in so-called modern scientific terms. This is an established scientific fact. But in the early, you know, 200, 300 years ago, when the first Indologists, they came to India, and they saw that the scriptures are advocating that cow dung is very pure and it has a very purifying effect. Cow urine is very pure, it has very purifying effect. So they were all laughing. What is this? These Indian scriptures, they call them scriptures. It's all foolishness. But now, later on, the joke is on them. So therefore, if a person has only academic knowledge, there is no realization of the knowledge, then the person is liable to be deluded. So therefore, Krishna says here in the second verse of today's set of verses, Jnana Vijnana Triptatma. That means a person or a living entity who is completely, who has complete knowledge as well as he has realized that knowledge. Such a personality. So the realization is important. Otherwise, you know, Jnana Vijnana Triptatma, like Prabhupada makes this point even in the third chapter. In the third verse of the third chapter, Prabhupada, in the purport, he makes a very fantastic point. I'll just point it out. Prabhupada says, religion without philosophy is sentiment or sometimes fanaticism, while philosophy without religion is mental speculation. So therefore, there are so many philosophical statements, but unless there is a system whereby we can understand this philosophy and realize the philosophical statement by regular practice. So therefore, there are so many philosophies, there are so many methods of which are explained, you know, even in this particular Bhagavad Gita itself, Krishna is explaining about Karma Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, and all these things. But if you only understand them from an empirical point of view, from a theoretical point of view, without understanding or without having a system whereby you can actually practice what is being explained and live accordingly, then it just becomes philosophy without religion is just fanaticism. You have philosophy, but there is no religion, there is no practice. So we have to understand that why there are so much philosophies and so many other things. Prabhupada says ahead, the Bhagavad Gita is a sign of Krishna consciousness. Is a science of Krishna consciousness. No one can become Krishna conscious simply by mundane scholarship. Just by being a big PhD scientist. You have certain level of intelligence, but that doesn't mean that you are Krishna conscious. Rather, mundane, or even if you are a scholar and you have studied so many Vedic scriptures and so many other scriptures, you know so many mantras, so many shlokas and everything, but just mundane scholarship will not help you to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One must be fortunate enough to associate with a person who is in pure consciousness. So, here Prabhupada is bringing the concept of how we have to associate with a person who is in pure Krishna consciousness. That is most important. You may by yourself have studied so many scriptures and understood so many things and memorized so many mantras, but that is not the most important aspect. Unless we have the guidance of a person who is in personally pure consciousness, we will not be able to understand. Like, for example, when a person sees a beautiful woman, suppose there is a beautiful woman, depending upon the perception of the individual who is observing, say a particular scientist, then the scientist will say that this particular woman's body is composed of so many, you know, chemicals and so many enzymes and so many other things. He will give you a very analytical explanation of the entire body. And say some man-eating animal, tiger or lion, looks at the same woman and the animal would think, oh, this is my next meal. And suppose a lusty person, lusty man is looking at the woman and he would be thinking, wow, I can enjoy with this woman. And a small child is looking at the same woman and that child sees, oh, here comes my mother. She will now pick me up and she will pet me. So same individual is arousing so many different feelings. According to the level of perception of the individual, each individual is looking at the same person with different visions. Similarly, if you see in Srimad Bhagavatam, gold is described as yellow stool. Now someone might wonder, why yellow stool of all things, gold? So if we consider carefully, what is this gold? When a person is traveling, say in a desert, so in a desert there is a phenomenon which is known as mirage. You know, the person is traveling, he is very thirsty, and at a very far off distance he sees what looks like water. It looks like water to him. It looks like a very nice green oasis with lot of green trees and greenery, and he starts running madly towards that particular vision which he is seeing. But because of his thirst and his fatigue, because of walking through the desert, this vision which he sees is not something which is reality. And when he runs towards it, it's a mirage. And when he runs towards it, whatever little energy he has, he is expending even that. So actually, this particular mirage or this vision is more harmful to him. So similarly with gold. Gold looks like something which is going to give me a lot of pleasure. Like, there are so many reasons why people would like to have more gold. People feel that it will give me a sense of security. I can buy so many things. It will provide so many different ways for me to enjoy my senses. But if you look at it more closely, gold brings with it its own sense of insecurity. People always feel threatened. Maybe someone will, you know, enter my house, steal the gold. So generally it is observed that those who have more wealth, more gold in that sense, have to depend more upon antidepressants and sleeping pills to have a good night's sleep. We have so many high-rise buildings around our building, and usually when we get up in the morning, sometimes at 3 in the morning we are awake, so we see many of these buildings in the windows, the people who stay in that windows, the light is on and they are, you know, just pacing back and forth at 3 in the morning. Completely under stress, so much of tension. Also, sometimes women wear jewelry, and in our local trains, gold jewelry, definitely not somebody who is a seasoned traveler in Mumbai local trains will ever wear gold jewelry, because there is a definite risk of losing your ear or something, you know. You just pull the earrings off the ear. And of course, this was a story told to me by one of our devotees. There was a big high-rise building being constructed nearby, and there was a big penthouse apartment on the top floor, which was for sale. But for many months, nobody was moving in. So when somebody tried to find out why it is still vacant, so the person was told that whenever somebody shows some interest in buying this particular penthouse apartment, so when that person shows some interest, immediately he gets a phone call on his personal mobile saying that he has to deposit an amount of, say, 20 lakh rupees or 25 lakh rupees at one particular place. So he attracts the attention of the underworld. So, in one sense, people feel that gold is something which is going to give me a lot of pleasure. But if we analytically look at it, gold is not something which definitely gives you pleasure, especially not in today's day and age. So, we should see, we should understand, but a pure devotee of the Lord, if Krishna, if we, as devotee of the Lord, for a devotee of the Lord, if a stone is, you know, in his endeavor, where he tries to see that whatever pleases Krishna is something which is, you know, then I am for it. And if it does not please Krishna, then I don't care what I feel, but I am not for it. So similarly, if a stone is of some use to us in the service of Krishna, then it is useful. But even if gold somebody gives us, but it is not helpful in the service of Krishna, then we don't take it. So that is the position of a pure devotee that here Krishna is talking about. Krishna is saying, Yukta iti uchyate yogi sama loshtrashma kanchana. Sama loshtrashma kanchana. So what is this? Let us see. Loshtra means pebbles, ashma means stones, and kanchana means gold. Right? So loshtra, ashma, kanchana means loshtra pebbles, ashma stones, and kanchana gold. All these three are sama. For a person who is actually achieved the highest level of yogi. Yukta ityuchyate yogi sama loshtrasma kanchana. So he sees everything, whether it be pebbles, stones or gold, as the same. So we have to see, you know, that when will a person, what will be the stage when a person will see gold and stone alike? What will be the stage when a person will see gold and stone alike? So Krishna gives a hint to this question also in this very chapter. In the second verse, Krishna gives a very nice hint, very powerful hint. He says, Yam sanyasamiti prahur yogam tam vidhi pandava nahya asanyasta sankalpo yogi bhavati kaschana. So he says, nahi asanyasta sankalpa. Na he means for one can never become a yogi. When one can never become a yogi, or a person who is completely absorbed in the Supreme, unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. Unless a person renounces or gives up this desire to just enjoy his senses, whatever the senses demand, I just have to provide them. So unless this particular propensity is curbed, so in the second verse itself, Krishna gives a hint of how a yogi becomes samaloshtrasma kanchana. or a particular individual, how he can become Samalostasma Kanchana? So for one can never become a yogi unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. So unless a person renounces the desire for sense gratification, he can never become a yogi. And yukta itti uchyate yogi samalostrasma kanchana. So he can never become a yogi unless he gives up the desire for sense gratification. And only when you come to the stage of being a yogi, you become samalostrasma kanchana. So if you want to come to that stage where we look at pebbles, stones, gold, all of them with equal vision, that means you have to give up the desire for sense gratification. Like so this is a big yogi. He has come to the stage, person has controlled his mind and senses, his mind completely under his control. And because of mind being under control, he comes to the stage of yogi, and he has become very tranquil. And now Krishna is explaining, when this yogi further advances, he comes to a stage where he becomes samalostrasma kanchana. He can see pebbles, stone and gold, everything as the same. And this is 7th and 8th verse. And the 9th verse, Krishna gives one more step ahead. How a yogi, this is like, even when a person is yogi, there are various stages. And higher than this, now you might wonder, what is higher than this? This is too much. You are talking about gold and stones and pebbles being the same. So if a person has achieved that level of tranquility and that level of, being equipoised, that he can see stones and pebbles and gold as same, then what more? What is the next step higher? So Krishna is explaining the next verse. Suhrin mitra rudasina madhyastha dveshya bandhusu sadhushvapicha papeshu samabuddhir vishishyate. So he is talking suhrin. First word is suhrin. So those suhrit means suhrut, somebody who is a well-wisher. Those who are well-wishers by nature. Suhrut or friends, your friend circle. Mitra or those who are benefactors. Like in Sanskrit, there are different, if you say mitra, suhrut, these are all in a broad category, they all indicate friends. But if you actually go down to analyze each word and properly define them, then suhrut is a well-wisher by nature. Mitra is benefactors, but they have affection towards you. They benefit from you, but they have affection towards you. Mitra, who are benefactors or who benefit from you and they have affection towards you. Ari means enemies. Udasina means those who are neutral. They don't have any outward very close friendship, but there's no enmity also. Udasina, madhyastha, mediators between two groups of belligerents. Dveshya, those who are envious towards you. Bandhushu means relatives. Sadhushu, pious people. Papeshu, sinners. And samabuddhi. So, for all these different categories, suhrut, mitra, ari, udasina, madhyastha, dveshya, bandhushu, sadhushu and papeshu, for all these different categories, that is well-wishers, benefactors, neutrals, mediators, envious people, relatives, pious people, sinners, towards all these people, someone who has equal intelligence, that means the person is considered still further advanced. Still further advanced from whom? From a person who sees pebbles, stones and gold as equal. A person is further advanced than such a person when he regards honest well-wishers, affectionate benefactors, neutral, mediators, the envious people, friends and enemies, the pious people and the sinners, all of them with an equal mind. So when a person is on such a stage, then this is like the topmost advancement that a yogi can come to. Like if you see, in today's world, who is a friend generally? Generally, if you ask, then usually sometimes people give you, will give you a very cliched response. A friend in need is a friend indeed. But usually if we scratch a little further, then we'll find that it's more like Jio or Jine Do. You know? Let me do my stuff and get my own stuff. You do your own stuff. I will not trouble your operations and you don't trouble my operations. That is more practical and what we observe in day-to-day life today about being friendly. I scratch your back, you scratch my back, and both of us are happy. But all this lasts, this so-called friendship, you know, it lasts only till there is a clash of interest. Like there is a very nice story in the Mahabharata. Narad Muni narrates this to the Pandavas. He says that at one time there were two demons. Their name was Sunda and Upasunda. And they were brothers actually. And they were so close and they were such fierce warriors. And they had got actually a boon from Lord Brahma saying that nobody could kill them except each other. So they were very close to each other, very friends, you know, very close, and of course they were brothers. So even the demigods, they were very bewildered how to break these two of them. So ultimately what happened was, Indra, he sent one of the Apsaras, her name was Tilottama. And when she went in front of them, immediately, as I said, that clash of interest arose. Both of them wanted her as his wife. And because of that clash of interest, that immediately you scratch my back and I scratch my back, immediately was finished. You know, and both of them started fighting against each other and they ended killing each other. So this is a sort of friendship or what we see in practical day-to-day life. But we can see in the scriptures, we see so many examples where actually a person exhibits this particular stage. We have seen great devotees of the Lord exhibiting this stage where the person considers well-wishers, benefactors, neutrals, mediators, friends, enemies, sinners, and pious people, all with an equal mind. One example which comes very readily to mind is that of Lord Jesus Christ. I'm sure everybody is aware of this particular incident, especially when the Lord was crucified, Jesus Christ was crucified, and he was on the cross. And at that time, still, his prayer to the Lord, he said, "My Father, Lord in heaven, please forgive all these people, for they do not know what they are doing." So this is such a classic example of what this verse in Bhagavad Gita says. You know, we might be wondering, is this practically possible? I mean, who knows? This is all good, nice to hear, but are there any practical examples that we can look up to? And nothing comes to my mind so readily than this example from Lord Jesus Christ's life. He was so badly persecuted. And he was actually nailed to the cross. Such a painful thing. And still he is asking forgiveness for those people who were the cause of his suffering. Also we have this from Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas Thakur, they approach Jagai and Madhai. And Madhai throws this stone at Nityananda Prabhu. It hits Nityananda Prabhu and there is profuse bleeding from his forehead. But still Nityananda Prabhu tells Madhai that this particular injury which you have caused me is not so painful to me as much as your refusal to chant the holy names of the Lord. Please take the holy names of the Lord. Please chant them. So what more level of compassion can we understand from this? Even from a person who has actually caused physical injury. Also we have the example of Srila Haridas Thakur. Srila Haridas Thakur was whipped in 22 marketplaces continuously. He was whipped. And after whipping him through 22 marketplaces, he was continuously chanting the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And still, after all that, when those two people, the two executioners who were whipping him, they started to become tired. And because out of sympathy and, you know, feeling that unnecessarily they will be troubled for not fulfilling the orders that he has to be whipped till death, you know, out of compassion towards them, Haridas Thakur actually goes into a trance. He tells them, now I'll enter a trance, you throw my body into Ganges and you can go back and report that we have fulfilled the task. Also, we have this example of King Yudhishthir from Mahabharata. King Yudhishthir was called Ajatashatru. Ajatashatru means for one whose enemy is not yet born. So, for Duryodhan, even if he considered Yudhishthir as his enemy, Yudhishthir never considered him as Duryodhan as his enemy. Like we see in the Mahabharata, in the episode where in the court, Draupadi was being dishonored. We see everyone else, Arjun, Bhima, even Nakula and Sahadev, all the other four brothers, they took some vow. Like Bhima said, I will break the thighs of this Duryodhan. Nakul and Sahadev, they vowed that they will kill Shakuni. So every one of them, they were taking so angry and they were taking vows. But still, Yudhishthir Maharaj, through the entire episode, he was completely equipoised. And he did not show, or there is no question of just concealing. But actually there was no feelings of any enmity. He considered everybody with an equal mind. Similarly, the pure devotee of the Lord is a friend of everyone. And he can never cause any harm to anyone. Like we see Narad Muni. Narad Muni, when he was walking through the forest, he saw so many animals which are being half killed. And he saw ultimately the Mrigari, the hunter, who was causing all that trouble and all that pain to the animals. But still, Narad Muni, when he explained and he spoke to Mrigari, he caused a complete change in the life of this particular hunter. So, Narad Muni has the speciality of touching the lives of all types of people, intellects, kings, princes, hunters, all types of people, and bringing them closer to Krishna. So we can say Srila Prabhupada was a jet age Narad Muni. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada, he went to the West with this message. And it was not that he went there and there was a group of, you know, there were so many people waiting there to assist him. He went all alone. In fact, even when he was going from here, there was nobody here in India to see him off. You know. And he went not through some flight, some plane or some luxury ocean liner. He went because he got a passage on a cargo liner, on a cargo ship. And the passage through the ocean was not so easy. Went through so many hardships. Went through so much pain and so much ridicule and so many other hardships and difficulties. Even during the course of his preaching in the West, you know, began his entire preaching by speaking to some ladies some people who are collected in the YMCA, or some professor used to call him to speak to his class of students who were studying Eastern philosophy. Not that he had all programs set up and all these things, but still we should understand that Srila Prabhupada, against all odds, without considering that what sort of people are these are all mlechas, how will they understand? They don't have they are always drugged on LSD and cocaine and hashish and running around, you know, doing all sorts of nonsensical activities, eating meat. How will they understand this? He never thought that way. So we can see Srila Prabhupada is also, you know, a classic case of this particular verse which we read here. A person is considered still further advanced when he regards honest well-wishers, affectionate benefactors, neutral mediators, envious friends and enemies, pious and sinners, all with an equal mind. And to end, I'll just briefly mention about this episode at Juhu. We have our temple in Juhu. So this particular Juhu land, it's a very it's a very interesting episode how this land was obtained by Srila Prabhupada. And actually, this person who was the owner of the land, he was in a mood to try to fraud or defraud Srila Prabhupada and the organization and just accept some money from them and then say, no, I will not be able to give you the land and something like that, because he was also well connected in terms of political and other connections. So Srila Prabhupada, he was so much determined to get the land back, and after a long struggle between the owner and so many twists and turns, I will not go into the details, but after a long struggle, finally, you know, it somehow happened that this particular owner, you know, that he suffered a heart attack, a fatal heart attack. So after all that thing was over, somehow even his wife was reluctant. She was feeling that my husband has gone through so much, I should not give this land. But ultimately, Srila Prabhupada, he was so loving. He did not have any feelings of enmity. His only concern was, I have promised this land to Sri Radha Ras Bihari. I have brought Radha Ras Bihari here and I have told them that you stay here and I will build a very nice temple for you. So I have given this promise to my Lord Radha Ras Bihari, and my only interest here is that I want to fulfill this promise which I have made to the Lord. So on a personal level, he was not so much like, you know, why this person is not giving me the land. It's not me the land. His more immediate concern was, this is my promise to my Lord. So if Radha Ras Bihari wants, then they will arrange so that he gets the land. So in that sense, later on, Prabhupada met the wife of this particular individual after his death. And he said, you had to unnecessarily go through so much trouble and pain. And she, this particular lady, she recalls that when I met Srila Prabhupada, it was like as if I was meeting my father. He was so compassionate and so loving towards me. And so therefore we can see that externally, if there is such a, you know, for some other piece of land, if somebody else goes through so much struggle, it is like there will be heavy enmity between the two parties involved. But there was nothing like that. And later on, his wife very happily gave the land to ISKCON. So we can understand that here, Krishna, in these three verses, he is talking about higher and higher levels of a person in yoga, of a yogi. So initially he says that for one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is reached and he has attained tranquility. At a higher stage, such a person starts seeing pebbles, stone and gold as the same. And still higher, you know, he sees that person is considered still further advanced when he regards well-wishers, benefactors, neutral, mediators, envious people, friends and enemies, pious and sinners, all with an equal mind. Okay, so we'll stop here today. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. If anybody has any questions or comments, you can ask. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.